بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. It's an honor and privilege to be the moderator of today's session with four distinguished, in fact, key speakers. And we thank you really for being able to as well attend. And before I start, I just wanted to reflect on two things. One, on the first session of this big event that we have attended 2 days ago, and today's as well inauguration of the Qatar Pearl gas to liquid GTL. I was very, very much impressed and pleased to hear that the key speakers then had highlighted, in fact, very much what we've been, in fact, as well trying to address. They were talking about the quality of education, the networking, the communication aspects, and how to integrate things. And in today's event of the inauguration of Qatar Pearl, Qatar to Liquid as well, it has highlighted very interesting aspects to this particular workshop. In fact, they've talked a lot about what could spin off from this particular GTL, gas to liquid mega project. There could be a lot of research and development that could be hopefully studied, reviewed, analyzed by scientists, researchers, and so on, and then applied, be it locally or regionally or internationally. So we found, in fact, the two examples that I've cited very much relevant to what we've been, in fact, trying to pursue. As I think most of you know, that Qatar has already launched its vision. And to pursue this vision, we've realized that there has to be a driving force, and the driving force is the national development strategy. And I'm glad and happy to say that we have a key components under the economic and the diversification aspect, the R&D, and the R&D is going to play a major role, in fact, in this. And this is a clear sign that Qatar is moving towards its commitment. One, yes, we have allocated a 2.8% of our GDP towards the R&D and the funding of the R&D. That's one aspect, but to see it on the ground, I think the infrastructure has already been established. We have a full-fledged organization, and they are restructuring and putting together hopefully their strategy that hopefully will be aligned with the overall framework of the national vision. So this is something I would like to stress, that Qatar and its hopefully plan to develop a more sustainable growth economy, we think, we value the R&D aspects, and we think the R&D is going to be the cornerstone and the linkage between basically the future growth and how we can link it to the human development in a big way. Let alone, for instance, the hosting of 2022. I think hosting even the 2022 is going to bring about interesting, not only raising the capabilities of the country or the nation as a whole, but it will also have hopefully an interesting dimension to the R&D in the future, because there will be a lot of course, research and studies, small, medium enterprises and other that can have a big bearing on this. And in fact, to complement as well this, we and Qatar Statistics Authority, in collaboration with the Qatar Foundation Research and Development and the UNESCO Institution of Statistics, or for statistics, are planning to conduct an extensive survey in the R&D. And this will bring, in fact, what's this session all about. We have four key distinguished speakers, as I've said. they will be talking about the input of R&D and the output and its impact. And I think that's what matters, the impact and how we could go about realizing this impact. And there will be another presentation on as well the experience in the Arab world, be it lessons learned or things that we could maybe consider for the future, and also measuring the R&D in general. So with this background, I'd like to also say that hopefully the overall event will reflect on the national development strategy on a big way. And what matters to us is how we're gonna go about integrating it and putting it together in terms of its application. Now I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Professor Michael. He is a professor at the University of Stellenbosch at Cape Town, South Africa. His presentation is entitled The Measurement of R&D and Its Relevance in Innovation Policy. In his presentation, he will focus on the role of innovation is to play in enabling Qatar to make the transition from a factor-driven economy to a knowledge-based economy. This is something that I have also missed in my brief, but Qatar has been referring a lot on the knowledge-based society, and this is exactly what we are trying, in fact, all as a nation, to move into this transformation or transition from where we are today to hopefully to a more knowledge-based economy. So with this, I would like to welcome Professor Michael Fan.
So that you have only 15 minutes.
I shall do my best. Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you.
Excellencies, colleagues, good afternoon. Thank you very much for the invitation to come and speak to you in Qatar. It's my first visit to the country, and like many others, I'm very impressed. Thank you for the introduction, and I shall do my best to stick to the time limits. I'm talking about the measurement of R&D, outcomes and relevance to innovation policy, with the stress that if you wish to develop an innovation policy and manage it, you need to know what is going on in your system. So I want to start with the measurement of R&D, a little history, because what I'm doing in a sense is to set the scene for the expert colleagues that come after me. Measuring R&D goes back 70, 80 years, to the 1930s. R&D in warfare, of course, was very, very important in the Second World War, and immediately in its closing stages, the advisor to then President Truman came out with a very famous dictum. He produced a report entitled Science, the Endless Frontier, and in it he stated very clearly that new products and processes depended on new principles and new conceptions, which in turn result from basic scientific research. And that set the stage for what is still called the linear model of innovation. If you fund basic research, eventually, somewhere in the future, out will come products and processes that add economic value. This idea was given added emphasis by the economists in their theories of economic growth, studying the production function, and notably the Nobel laureate Robert Solow showed that it was impossible to account for anything up to 70% of American economic growth if you simply looked at labor and capital productivity. There was something left over, he called it the residual, and he attributed the residual to technological change, for which you might substitute the phrase R&D. That, if you like, confirmed the Bush idea. Bush's practical experience was now confirmed in theory, which is the way economists like to work. It suited the big science agenda of the Cold War era, and things moved along quite nicely. 1963, the young OECD commissioned a process to systematize the measurement of R&D, and my colleague, Dr. Ahmad Hussain, will talk to you in detail about what that entails. Now we come into the 70s, a turbulent period, the American economy facing difficulties, funding the Vietnam War, the various oil shocks and oil crises, the rise of the importance of the Chicago School of Economic Thinking, Thatcher and Reagan's revolution, the lean state, and the emphasis on value for money. But all along, there was something happening in another country called Japan that was surging ahead. Europe was in stagflation, stagnation with inflation. America the same, but Japan was flying. It's a little bit like today. Okay. It's a little bit like today when the East, namely Korea and China, is flying, and Europe and America are stagnating. Studies were carried out to try and understand better what was going on, and what came back was the notion that this linear model didn't seem to work in Japan. Instead, what was happening there was a much more concerted effort involving government, the financial system, universities, and business. It was more coordinated, and the coordinating agency, some of you would know, was MITI. And these ideas came back to the West and turned into what we call the innovation systems approach. Now, what are innovations? I simply put together a few images to illustrate. The top left one, of course, is the first mobile phone, a brick. On the right is an accident called Viagra. Viagra did not come out of deliberate research. It was purely accidental observations by medical practitioners of their male patients who had circulatory disorders. The light bulb, Edison's light bulb, very deliberate hard work, 1,000 attempts to find the right filament. And then on the bottom right from my country, South Africa, 20 years of agricultural research to give you new varieties of Proteus. These are all innovations because they get disseminated into markets. So let me move to the definition of innovation. The introduction into a market or an organization of a new or significantly improved product or service. It's got to be new. It's got to be disseminated. The example I gave at yesterday's workshop was a plastic bottle of water. Innovation activities are varied. One of the innovation activities, and that's the point of this section of my talk, only one of them is R&D. You can produce innovations without R&D. You reorganize your business. You do things better and more productively. That's an innovation. There's no R&D involved. You borrow ideas from your competitor. You don't do the R&D. They do the R&D. Most firms in most countries do not do R&D. It's around 5% of firms do R&D. The rest get their ideas from somewhere else. So innovation involves many activities, and the primary activity is the sharing of knowledge, knowledge exchange. Some of it is knowledge generation, I mentioned that already. There are other forms of exchange through codified knowledge, publications, plant varieties, copyrights, and so on. And then there are techniques for knowledge absorption, training your staff, engineering, design capability, and skills generation. And lastly, you've got to understand your market. Those who were with me yesterday will recall this diagram, the newcomers in the room, so let me spend just a couple of seconds on this. In the innovation system idea, the important thing to realize is that there are three major actors. Universities are but one. This conference has a very strong emphasis on universities. There are government research labs in green, and then there's business itself, the business sector. And all of this is functioning in a very much larger sea of national regulations, national culture, external influences, and depends also on the availability of an effective services background. You have that in Qatar. The role of state-owned enterprises. If you're going to be putting things in the market, you need a standards authority, and so on. The point is, if you focus only on one of these, you are missing out. Your policy, your innovation policy, has to look at all three synergistically. Now, how do we measure and what do we measure? One of the things we measure are the inputs to R&D. Dr. Hussain will talk to you about that. The Statistics Authority, of course, is already measuring education statistics, labor force statistics, and so on. Then there are the outputs. I've mentioned those briefly, publications, patents, and plant varieties, and other outcomes through innovation surveys, which are very much more complicated instruments, and we're not going to deal with that today. Cost-benefit studies on the value of your research, counterfactuals to see what would have happened if you didn't do the research, outcome and impact evaluations, the stuff of the social sciences, and then measurement of networks, the effectiveness of networks. This conference is talking about globalization of research, and it's all about networks. And the evidence for the networks come in co-publications and co-invention citations in patent analysis. The R&D surveys are easy to interpret. You get very clear numbers. You can use them to set national goals. I believe Qatar has set the goal of attaining 2.8% of GDP being spent on R&D. In Europe, they set the agenda of 3%. They didn't reach it, and they will not reach it. And many countries in Europe are still running along at around 2%. By focusing on R&D, it looks indeed as if we're going back to the linear model. And in a sense, the linear model has refused to die. It's very easy to understand. Politicians love it. Put money into research, out comes a product. The popular media emphasize the linear model. They show you a scientist, usually a man, wearing glasses, wearing a laboratory coat, doing R&D. That's the image of innovation. There's a big confusion between innovation and invention. Research is research, invention is something else, and innovation is something else again. I want to just sidestep and talk a little bit about a country that's frequently used as an exemplar. This is a rather complicated diagram, but let me explain. This is Korea between 1964 and 2004. The important message of this graphic is that in 1964, if you look at the blue column, that was the percentage of R&D being done by the state. And you will see as the economy expands, I haven't put on GDP growth, the share of state spending on R&D declines, and it is substituted by spending by the private sector in yellow. Eventually, when they are almost equal, the expenditure, the ratio, that's the red curve, the ratio of R&D to GDP attains 1%, and then it flies. And what it says to you is that in the early stages of industrialization in Korea, R&D was not very important. But as Korea moved from capital goods production, ships, big things, things that hurt you when they fall on your foot, and they moved into TVs and semiconductors, knowledge became very important, knowledge-intensive industry, and therefore R&D became important. The increase in expenditure on R&D, I don't think came about because of a government decree. It came about because of necessity. For the firms to compete in the global world, they had to produce goods that were at the technological frontier. I think I'm running out of time, so I want to skip that one. Qatar, one way that Qatar has been measured so far is through the Global Competitiveness Index. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this. Qatar has an excellent macroeconomic environment, which is the third pillar, factor 8, and its education system, its healthcare are among the best 20 in the world. If you look at pillar 4, it's ranked 15. But when you drop down there to innovation, Qatar is listed at rank 23. And we can look at that in some little bit more detail. You'll see one of those factors, government procurement of technological products, is very high. But when it comes to capacity for innovation, the assessment that has been made by industry active in Qatar puts the country relatively low. Quality of scientific institutions high, companies spending on R&D relatively low. So there is work to be done here in two ways. Number one, we need to be sure that these numbers make sense. And that's the job of the R&D survey. And secondly, we want to know what actions are needed to boost this performance. One of the measures that is not conventionally carried out through an R&D survey is to look at your publications. I had hoped to attend a session this morning on publications, but I was in the wrong room. Doesn't matter. Conventionally, publications are measured using two databases. There is more recently the Scopus database, and there is the old gold standard of the Institute for Scientific Information, which is now known as Web of Science. And this here is what you will get if you query that database for Qatar, an address in Qatar, a researcher who gives a Qatari address for the period of 2007 to 2010. In that period, it's something like 1,300 publications, and they're distributed according to the subject areas that you can see on the screen. The most intensive area, engineering and physics, sports sciences is very high, and then you get general and internal medicine, and if you look down the list, you'll see medicine appearing, or medical and health sciences appearing in many places, infectious diseases at the bottom, pharmacology, public health, endocrinology, obstetrics, and so on. And I'm drawing your attention to the fact that there is a lot of health sciences going on. We heard a lot about that, and of course you have your to-be biomedical research center. So let's have a look what else you can learn from this database, and the next one shows you where the research is taking place and with whom. It turns out that Hamad Medical Corporation and the hospital, that it's the hospitals that are part of that network, are the site of most of the publications, which is why I emphasized the health research. After that, you get Qatar University, Texas A&M, meaning the US side, and then Texas A&M, Qatar, and so on. So it gives you a sense of the extent of globalization or internationalization of the research effort. And if you've not seen it before, perhaps there are other things you'd like to comment on when we go to discussion. One more minute. Nearly there. In conclusion, to develop research and innovation policy, you have to think right across the economy. If your education system isn't singing, if you have problems with the mobility of staff, if you have restrictive immigration requirements, you can't bring in people when you need them, your innovation system will not function optimally. And I think that is where I must end. Thank you, and shukran.
Thank you, Professor Khan, for, I think, a very stimulating brief or presentation. It's obviously had covered the emergence of innovation systems, the experiences of other places, the definitions of innovation, and it's not just simply the R&D. It goes much beyond the R&D. So it's something that I think we need to address also from our end. How Qatar is being positioned in the R&D, where are the areas that we needed maybe to address and to focus around. And this is why, for instance, the survey that we intend to conduct will provide an evidence-based, hopefully, outcome or results for policy making, for decision making, and even for planning purposes. Now, the second presenter is Dr. Ahmed Hussein, who is an expert in Qatar Statistics Authority. He will be presenting to us measuring the R&D inputs, personnel and expenditure, and he will focus on the input indicator for measuring or for the measurement of R&D activities at a national level. Dr. Ahmed.
Good afternoon. I would like really to thank you for attending this workshop on measuring the research and development outcomes. I have to mention something before I start my presentation, really, that all the information and definitions and conventions in this presentation are based on Frascacci manual prepared by OECD. Frascacci is a villa in Italy where the OECD prepared this manual. We will be using this manual in preparing our R&D survey. So, and I think Frascacci manual is became the Bible of measuring research and development at the international level, because really the UNESCO Institute for Statistics already adopted this, the contents of this manual in order to advise member countries to conduct surveys on R&D, on measuring R&D. So my presentation will focus on the definitions and conventions of R&D from statistical perspective, measuring R&D personnel, measuring R&D. So as you see, my presentation will focus on the input of the research and development, and my colleague Hatim will focus on the outcome of the research and development. So the definition, the first definition of, from a statistical perspective for R&D, research and experimental development comprise creative work undertaken on a systematic basis in order to increase the stock of knowledge, including knowledge of man, culture, and society, and the use of this stock knowledge to devise new applications. So there are three activities under the research and development. The first one is the basic research. Could be the basic research is a experimental or theoretical action or action taken in order to gain information, but with no particular application or use in view. Also, applied research is targeting, collecting, or new knowledge, but really directly primary towards a specific practical aim or objective. Experimental development is based on the gaining or the available knowledge directly to produce new materials, products, or devices. This is the difference between three. Now, who we are measuring? We are measuring institutions in the area of business enterprises, government, higher education, private and nonprofit organizations, and we are measuring also the resources coming from abroad. Now, what type of classification used for the science? Let's say, actually, we don't have an agreed upon classifications for science and technology. As you see here, we have six areas identified by UNESCO in order to work for R&D. Natural sciences, engineering and technology, medical and health sciences, agricultural sciences, social sciences, and humanities. So we are measuring the six areas. Now, the classification of socioeconomic objectives. How now the R&D relate to the economy? So as I mentioned, the classification here is really an experience from, let's to say, advanced member countries. We are using it in research and development surveys in many member countries. So, and I would like really to mention that exploration and exploitation of the earth and the space environment in the area of transport, telecommunication, and other infrastructure, energy, industrial production, health, agriculture, education, culture creation, political and social systems, general advancement of knowledge, and defense. Let me first go to the personnel. As I mentioned in the beginning, I have to focus on two issues. The first one is measuring personnel and measuring the expenditure on R&D. We measure the personnel who are really directly working in R&D, who are working in R&D, researchers, technicians, and equivalent staff, other supporting staff. Researchers, professionals engaged in the conception of creation of a new knowledge, products, processes, methods, and systems, and also in the management of the projects concerned. Include scientific managers, postgraduate students at the PhD level engaged in R&D, and in some member countries like Tunisia, they consider the master's level in measuring research and development. So technicians, really, whose main tasks require technical knowledge, technical experience, and working in the area of research and development. Other supporting staff like unskilled craftsmen, secretarial, and clerical staff. But really, I have to mention here, should be working directly to serve the R&D research. Measurement. How do we measure the personnel working on R&D? The first issue is the headcount. Headcount are data on total number of persons who are mainly or partially employed on R&D. Headcount data are the most appropriate measure for collecting additional information about R&D personnel, such as age, gender, national origin. Then, full-time equivalent. So we have let's say, a professor at the university works, let's say, 70% of his time for teaching and 30% of his time for research. We have a researcher also. He works 70% for research and 30% of his time for teaching. So we have to consider really the part-time part-time in working in research and development. Full-time equivalent is the true measure of the volume of R&D, really. Okay, here there are four researchers who are working in R&D. Full-time, part-time, part-time as well. 90%, 60%, 40%, 20%. All of them consists as 2.2 full-time equivalent. Only 2.2. They are four, but they are equivalent to 2.2 full-time. Then source of the information for the R&D. Sometimes we get information from the time use surveys, which we use to conduct it from 5 to 6 years, based on researchers' own evaluation of the distribution of their working time. The researchers expressed how many hours they are working for research and development, based on the estimation of the director, the technical director, the head of the department, also based on R&D coefficients. So these are the sources of information. Measuring now R&D expenditure, also intramural expenditure is the main really expenditure used in calculating the expenditure. Also, we are using the current cost and the capital cost are measured, but depreciation costs are excluded in measuring the expenditure on R&D. R&D expenditure general issues. R&D involves significant transfers of resources among units. Units here means the entities. The entity of the research and development organization and sector, in particular between government and other performers, important information for science and policy. That's enough. Measuring R&D expenditure. How do we measure a statistical unit or a statistical sector or a statistical entity have intramural and extramural expenditure on R&D? And as I mentioned, we consider intramural expenditure. The full procedure for measuring expenditure. First, we have to identify the intramural, then identify the sources of the funds as reported by the performer, aggregate the data by sectors or performer and sources of funds to derive significant national totals. Optional, identify the extramural R&D expenditure of each statistical unit or sector. R&D, now the expenditure from the current costs. Current costs are the labor cost, and the related salaries and housing, benefits, whatever. Then other current costs, including the supplies, the books, journals, materials from laboratories goes from on-site consultations, administrative and other overhead costs. R&D capital expenditure, also we have to consider the capital expenditure like the land and buildings, instruments or equipments, computer software. So these sources of R&D expenditure, we have to follow two criteria in identifying the source of R&D expenditure. There must be a direct transfer of resources. Then the transfer must be both intended and used for performance of R&D, such as a unit gives funds to another in return of equipment, services needed to own R&D. Now, the general university funds. We have to consider also the university funds as R&D contracts and grants from governments and another outside sources. University own funds, income from endowments, like let's say if Bill Gates passed away, he will donate to the university for $10 billion in order to work on research and development. Receipts from journal subscriptions, sales of serum or agriculture produce, etc., from university. That's enough for this. Now, let me show you this exercise. Now we have here the sources and then we have the performers. Let's say for the business enterprises, the sources of money to business enterprises comes from abroad, from non-governmental organization, from higher education, from government, from business organization comes to business enterprises. Then also the government comes from government, from higher education, from NGOs, from abroad, and etc. The total gross domestic expenditure R&D. Let's say Qatar targeted 2.8 of the GDP. Sorry. Okay, GDP, but the actual funding, I think, could be one point something from the GDP. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ahmed. I think it was very enlightening to realize that this is a very scientific process and even systems that one has to consider while proceeding in terms of measuring the R&D. So we appreciate the complexity and the implication behind how once if we decide hopefully to proceed with this, what should be considered. The third now presenter is Professor Hatem Mahani. He is a professor at the High School of Commerce of the University of Lambour in Tunisia. In his presentation, he is going to focus on a set of output and impact indicators that he has been adopted in order to be enabled to tell the story about what has happened when investments in the R&D. So, the professor, please.
Thank you, President. Thanks to QSA for the invitation. At the same time, I have the hardest work, I think, because talking about outcomes in R&D is surely the most difficult way to apprehend the question of R&D. Okay, my presentation is structured in five parts. first of all, the main challenge, which is the question of transforming R&D in outcomes. And then I will present some output indicators and outcome indicators. The challenge is ahead, and two or three conclusions. The problem of transformation of R&D to outcomes is emerging, and usually politicians ask about the return on investment of the budget allocated to the R&D. 1% or 3% is in some cases huge amount of investment, and as an investment we expect some return. And for this we have to give some answer, and I have to say that the answers in this field in particular aren't so so achieved like in the case of inputs. GERDS, the most cherished indicator, is considered as an input and not an output indicator, even if in some literature we talk about GERD as an indicator of performance. This is not the case. But we have some information on input on outputs with watching to the number of publication, patents, and other indicators, like we will see. And there is a need to examine the relevance of government-funded R&D and the ability to transform applied R&D into public and private sector benefits that are aligned with the national objectives or priorities. There is also an objective to monitor the outcome of innovative activity, and especially to ensure that long-term innovation strategies are successfully adopted. In my presentation, I will talk about, in the same time, output indicators and outcome indicators. There is difference between them. I tend to say that output indicators are direct indicators of impact, and outcome indicators are indirect outcomes, indirect impact of the R&D activities. In the case of output indicators, there is some list. There is a list, known list of output indicators. They are the number of patents, trademarks, registered design, and other activities. There is, for the field of publication, there is the number of peer-reviewed publication with specialization in particular scientific discipline, the number of citation, relative impact, the H index, etc. Even in this field, there is some improvement. I think it is interesting to say a few words on this improvement. Now we not only talking about the number of patents, but we are talking more about tried patents. Tried patents are patents registered in the same time in USA, in Japan, and in Europe. With this kind of specificities, with this kind of element, we enhance the informative and the quality of the indicators. We use always international registered patents application, and with in the form of ratio by a billion GDP. We use now international patent in PCT applied in some fields or in societal challenges. We use now a number of new trademarks per million population per capita, or number of new designs per million of the population. You see that even in the old indicators, there is an effort to ameliorate these indicators. When we talk about publication, we talk more and more about world shares of scientific publication and publication by field of science, the number of citations, self or not, H index, international scientific co-publication, or more precisely, scientific publications among the top 10% most cited publication worldwide as percentage of total scientific publication of the country. And this is more informative indicator. In the case of outcome, we are in a new field. This field is a new research field. And I must point out that before talking about these indicators, because we can say that there is some experiences in some regions in the world where they try to develop such kind of indicators, particularly in Europe, and particularly when we look to some statistics of Eurostats. The idea of impact is to have a world leadership improvement and some benefits to citizens. But how to do it? Here we have some kind of indicators, not surely used like the input indicators, but they are used in some regions. For the world leadership, I have four type of indicators to propose. Exports of high technology products as a share of total exports, knowledge intensive services exports as percentage of total services export, technology balance of payments, and license and patent revenues from abroad as percentage of GDP. For the production of these indicators, we have not to use R&D or innovation survey. These indicators are possible, the production of these indicators are possible in the national statistic agencies. In the economic department, you can have the most of this information. For local improvement, there is some indicators emerging now, like firms having introduced a product or a process innovation as percentage of all firms, sales of new to market products, percentage of turnover, sales of new to firm products, percentage of turnover, and impact of process innovation on costs, reduced labor costs or reduced use of materials and energy. For these indicators, we must have an innovation survey. We must do an innovation survey. When we talk about outcome as broader concepts, we can have many fields. I choose two fields, employment and environment. We have some indication in this case too. Employment in high tech services as a percentage of total workforce. The list of high-tech services exists. It is disponible. We can find it in the OECD documents. Employment in medium-high and high-tech manufacturing as a percentage of total workforce. the list of medium, high, and high-tech manufacturing are given by OECD documents. Here, we can have these information from the National Statistics Agency too. When we talk about environment innovation, we must use the survey or some kind of department in the environmental ministry. There is some improved and changes in the organizational method and marketing method to create environmental benefits compared to alternatives. And this is ways to find outcomes. Benefits to citizens could be found in the productivity, in calculating the productivity. The residual of solo is here. We can produce more going to A to B with the same number of the same quantity of labor. How? By improving productivity. The case of United States, period 87 to 2010. The growth is 2.9. Combined input growth is 1.8. One point is missing. The third of the growth is missing. The third of the growth is partly explained by, is a residual, but one or two of the determinants could be innovation and R&D. The question is to work on this residual and to tend, yes, to find the reason why we have third of the growth not explained. Challenges ahead. In the last 5 years, I give you some documents, some work done in the case of outcomes indicators. First, U.S. Congress, document for the U.S. Congress, developing a process for using metrics to assess the impact. NSF, 2006, to develop the foundation of an evidence-based platform, etc., and predict its outcome. Not achieved. OECD Innovation Strategy, 2006. Will include a framework for dialogue and review, new indicators on the innovation economic performance link. U.S. Department of Commerce, 2008, Measuring Innovation, Committee on Measuring Innovation. To develop new improved, third, how it affects economic growth. My conclusion, there is a growing and booming political interest. It was said, there is problem to apprehend the question of outcome. More precisely, we have to move from what can we say with the measurements we have towards a qualified development of new measures that can measure what we really want to know. And we have to develop what I call the non-economic impacts issues, short list of non-economic impact issues. Social implication, engagement with association working on scientific question, law, ethics, new jurisprudence, standardization, new standards, intellectual skills, development of new skills, creativity, critic, analysis, and synthesis. This is the real outcome, and we don't know how to capture all these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Hatem. It was very enlightening, I think, presentation. And you are very right in saying that it gets more challenging and complex when it comes to the output, and not just simply the output, but really the outcome and its impact, and how the impact can be linked to the various, in fact, aspects of other dimensions, like, you know, economics, social, and other. And it's not easy, really, to put it or to capture the whole thing together. But obviously, the patent aspects to it has also a very interesting dimension to it. Now I'd like to introduce the last, but by far the least, the fourth presenter, Professor Nabil Saleh. He is a professor at the National Research Center of Egypt. In his presentation entitled The Challenges of Measuring R&D in the Arab Region. Professor Saleh will focus on the role of science and technology indicators in developing evidence-based innovation strategy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about challenges of measuring R&D in the Arab region, it's one of the most difficult areas because we begin to talk about the positives and negatives and why aren't we getting that much data out? Let's look at the positive side and the negative side. From the negative point of view, we have a lack of science and technology policies, and I'm talking in a very general aspect because you can come up, but everyone will come up and say, oh, we have this and that, but I'm talking about the overall national science and technology policies. There's a lack of coordination on a national level. In other words, you have activities all over, but there's no national body that is collecting all of the data together. Quality of the data. How reliable is the data? Individuals versus systems. We get a lot of individuals working around, but there's no system. It's a repetition of the second one. Industries are unaware of the potentials of research, development, and innovation. What are the positive sides? The data is present. If you go into any country and try to dig it out, you'll find it all over the place. Growing awareness of an application of IT. Some countries are developing science and technology, including the research and development systems, but they're not complete yet. Several countries have sectoral policies, field of agriculture, environment, but still, they're not all under one big national umbrella. Several regional international organizations are willing to help. What's the present position of research and development indicators in the Arab region? This is the availability of research and development statistics as collected by the UNESCO Institute of Statistics. And you can see that only 5 countries out of 8 responded in the Arab states, in the African Arab states, 3 out of 12 in the rest of the Arab countries. And that's a very low response. We carried out 2 studies, 2006 and 2008. In the first study, we had 17 countries. And in the second one, we had the total 22. If you look at the table, you'll see that most of the answers that we're getting from collected data is in the higher education. But when it gets down to research and development, it's much lower than that. There's a discrepancy between the 200 and 2008 and the 2006. 5 countries that took place in the first survey didn't respond in the second one. And we got 3 additional countries in the 2008. So there's no consistency. What was said concerning R&D in the Arab countries? I collected a couple of quotations from some of our eminent people working in the field. And there's a program known as ESTEEM in the Mediterranean. It includes Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Palestine. Egypt didn't really take part in this one. The comment is, much remains to be completed, consolidated, and validated. So we're still missing parts all over. Given the fluidity of large numbers of contractual part-timers, in other words, in most of the universities, especially between private universities and governmental universities, you're getting the people working part-time here, and when you come to count them, you can get double counts, because they should be counted once under their original university. Confusion between what budgets do you have for science and technology and research and development. As was mentioned earlier, there's a system, but no one follows it. R&D indicators alone cannot fully explain the characteristics of R&D development. We heard the previous speakers give us the same impression. The dynamics of R&D system, R&D practices, informal behavior, contributions, as well as unexpected changes, just to mention a few. And then we come to a very sensitive area. When as much as 90% of the country's scientific production measured in number of publications are co-signed with foreign co-authors. How do you differentiate between what is national science belonging to the country and what is what belongs to the foreign side? Do we know anything about intellectual property? Do we sign these agreements beforehand when you're doing the research so that each one knows his institution's right and his personal right? Lessons to be learned. About a couple of months ago, we had a Malaysian scientist giving us a lecture on research and development, lessons to be learned within that area. I just took some excerpts out. He was talking about knowledge, R&D, and development. Now, I'd like to read some of them out. Knowledge resides in individuals and collectively in societies. In other words, individuals on their own don't work together. Creative energy and knowledge networks, that's what he's suggesting to be one of the major tools to take place in the dissemination of knowledge. Creative energy and knowledge networks, collaboration, co-creation, freedom, and democratization. And then it has to be managed. You don't leave everyone to do his own bit here and there. You've got to manage your inputs, the activities, the outputs, the outcomes, the impacts, and simply use a logical framework. In the field of development, we always misunderstand ICT. It's a big and important tool, but it's not research and development in that sense. It's carried out in all of the parent companies. Copying industrial models of the West is a dead end. That's his point of view. And developing countries cannot become producers if they depend only on foreign inputs. We have to build our own models for development. And under the purpose of research and development, peer review journal publication is not a good indicator of usefulness. It's just a figure. It shows that this institute is working stronger, higher, faster than the one, but it doesn't give you the quality of the work within the institute. or the country, to be quite honest. R&D agenda set by developed countries in the West. In other words, we always go there, pick up the ideas and come and copy them. It's wrong. We have to develop our own ideas. Urgent problems of developing countries still go unsolved. Now, in the last four or three overheads, I'll just give you a recipe for how do we start and how do we end the whole system. Where do we fill in the gaps? We have to have a solid, viable national science and technology system based on research, development, and innovation. Both science and technology, as was mentioned here, or I think it was mentioned also in the opening session, also should include the social sciences. Social sciences are complementary to the science and technology. They complete each other. Building reliable central R&D databases, and that's the critical point that every country should have its own database centrally, collectively, and periodically updated. And it should be based on international standards. We might disagree on the level of standardization, but at least for comparison reason, it should be standardized. We can start our own indicators at one time, but when we have enough knowledge about what we want and what we need. We should take into consideration the gender dimension, science popularization, that's in the education systems, quality assurance, and most importantly, as I said before, intellectually property rights. We should know what belongs to us, what belongs to the other side, and how to give each one his own share. Finally, strengthening R&D and innovation in higher education. It's very poorly represented there. They have master degrees, PhD degrees, but that's it. International scientific level of research centers should be centers of excellence, technology incubators, and science parks. And we should have a solid industrial base, which we lack in most of the Arab countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nabil. I think the snapshot that you had provided us definitely highlights some very interesting gaps in the Arab world. Maybe it could be viewed from others or another perspective. It is very discouraging, but I think it should inspire all of us because there are some very interesting lessons learned. And I think also it re-stresses what we've highlighted at the very beginning. And in fact, the distinguished speakers have highlighted a similar view on the importance of data, systems, integration, and connectivity on how we should go about it. I think the way forward that you have presented is some good food for thoughts, and it could be, I think, a recipe for any genuine nation who wants to proceed further with this. Now that we have concluded the four presentations, we'd like now to open the floor for any question and answer of maybe 10 minutes or so. Please, your name and the question, please.
there a relationship between impact indices, say H index, and innovation? And my question is motivated by my observation as a department head, where there are chemists, there are structural engineers, there are geotechnical engineers, there are biologists, that it is very much dependent on the field. If it's a relatively new field, there is a relationship between the impact indices in general and innovation. If it's established field, it's not. So I just want to know what the experts think of this.
Thank you very much. Both are very good questions. The alternative to the linear model is the innovation systems approach. And it essentially argues that innovation is a non-linear process, hence the challenge to the linear model, and that it involves intimate interaction, primarily with the business sector. Universities in and of themselves are not the site of innovation because they don't engage directly with the market. They're in the business of teaching and research. It's only when a university spins out ideas into a company, and that company itself engages with the market, that the innovations occur. So the alternative model is the innovation system approach. The second question where you raise H-index, I think that Professor Mheni will say more about it than I will, other than to agree with you that certainly citation rates are very discipline specific. We know that in law you can publish a little thing like that on some interesting case and you get an article. If you're in economics, you've got to do some magnificent thing, 30 pages long, and spend your whole PhD getting there. So you get one, whereas the legal people might get 10. And in health sciences, it's the same. So yes, there is a discipline link with citations, and that will naturally show up in the H-index as well. But I would appeal to Professor Mheni to amplify further. Thank you.
I think with this, we would like to conclude. And on behalf of the audience here, we'd like to again to thank the four presenters for a very informative and enlightening, in fact, presentations, which we would hope we could maybe put it together and take, hopefully, the next phase. Thank you again very much.